This session is from our recent client event about tuning up your brain for wealth, getting rid of what's in the way of earning more money as an online coach. We weren't going to share this publicly, but we're speaking to so many people who would benefit from this that it would just be criminal not to share it. So I would really encourage you to listen to this with an open mind, and let's level up your money mindset.
If you're not where you want to be financially, it's because in some way we're driving with the brakes on. We're running an old operating system that we've kind of haphazardly picked up. So we want to take the brakes off today, and this session is to help you to identify those brakes. Entrepreneurship is a vessel for self-improvement disguised as a business pursuit. It comes in and presses all your buttons and twists your nipples and stuff. Good morning. Thank you so much for making it. It's an absolute pleasure to see you all here. So we have got a major system upgrade for you today for your business. We've got the full team here, and we're covering sales, email copywriting, ads, mindset, everything. So it's a real treat. Does anyone have any major wins or struggles for this year? Yeah.
I closed my in-person business very
quickly. Smashed it. Yes.
Nice.
Hi, I'm Dali. Last May, I also quit my job, which is great. And the struggle has mainly been like dealing with the seasonal nature of running business in Iceland, because the weather is even more shit than here. So it's always been a struggle, but I'm trying to get through that and do better the next year.
Nice. Amazing, man. The one place in the world that's more shit weather than this. So, anyone else?
I've been living in Asia for the past 3 months with 30 degree weather, now missing with minus 1 degree.
You've come all the way to Newcastle to experience this. Beautiful.
Is that a win? it's a struggle.
Angela?
Yeah. With zero tech skills, I managed to create my own app for my outreach program. Oh.
Nice.
Mark.
So my name's Mark, and a bit of a PT virgin, only qualified in September. New career, got my first client just recently.
Yes.
So I'm just here to say that.
Amazing, man. First client, breaking the seal, and then it's smooth sailing from there. So we wanted to start with this, first of all, because it's not fair to make anyone else do presentation number one, but also, this is really the meat of today, and I think it underlies everything else that we're going to cover. This. We all grow up with personal hang-ups around money, belief structures that we've built and just been kind of inserted into us when we're young, and we don't end up questioning them. And our early experience with money and seeing our parents argue about money, usually one of their favorite pastimes, ends up becoming part of the way that we operate, and that reflects in our business as well. So stuff like this unconscious statement that money is the root of all evil, very kind of, obviously, unless you pay it to the Catholic Church, which was the originator of this kind of belief, everything is a scam, no such thing as a free lunch. We've all kind of heard that stuff, and it's maybe gone in at some point. And the sad but empowering truth is that we have the skills and talents that are disabled by our belief systems. This is from Maxwell Maltz, a guy who wrote Psycho-Cybernetics, great book. Anyone read it? Yeah, how did you find it? Yeah, it's written by a plastic surgeon who was talking about people's, how we have a desired identity and our belief systems that match that. And so sometimes somebody will have a desire or an identity that they are ugly, and so they want to have a nose job. And then they have the nose job, and either they update their identity in line with that I'm now beautiful, or that shifts onto something else, and then they continue that narrative. And so it's a fantastic book if you're interested in that stuff. But the idea here is that you have all of the potential that you would ever need as a basic human. And that what happens is our conditioning starts to put limitations on us. When you're a baby, you've got that infinite potential, and then you're told, like, stop that, sit down, don't put that in your mouth, stay still, you can't do that, etc. And those things start to become the layering. Your personal growth sets the ceiling for your business growth. This is something that keeps ringing true every time I come back around to this. Does anybody follow Leon Castillo? Self-mastered. Yeah, he's great. Similar thing with this, that you set the guardrails for what's possible in your business. You'll have seen this plastered all over the modules as well. Favorite James Clear quote, entrepreneurship is a vessel for self-improvement disguised as a business pursuit. Has anyone experienced that?
Yep.
Yeah. When you're running your business, it comes in and just presses all your buttons and twists your nipples and stuff, and then you end up, like, it forces you to confront all of that limitation. So we need to update the operating system. And if you're not where you want to be financially, it's because in some way we're driving with the brakes on. We're running an old operating system that we've kind of haphazardly picked up. So we want to take the brakes off today, and this session is to help you to identify those brakes. Does anyone know what happens to lottery winners?
Go broken ear?
They go broke very quickly.
Yeah. Why? It's, yeah, what percentage do we think it is?
90%.
Yeah, so it's 70% within 5 years go broke. 30% of them go technically bankrupt. Why do we think that is?
Because they didn't have millionaire mindset.
And the lack of financial literacy is the thing as well, isn't it? Through those belief systems.
Yeah, you suddenly just load, if we see money as energy, you suddenly just like load someone with a big old serving of it. It's like handling electricity, it blows the fuse. It's just not something we've got the structures built for. So the point is that you don't want money, as Johnny said there, that money is an energy, it's a vector. But if nobody else in the world existed, you wouldn't be chasing money. Because it's not a thing, you wouldn't want it. What it does though is it finds all of our buttons and presses them. And it's like the kind of people who might come to you as a client and they're obsessed with increasing their testosterone numbers. But really, they're not interested in increasing their testosterone. Like, you don't really want the number on the lab result chart to be higher. You want the result of that, more muscle, the energy, the drive, and the mood effects, and all that kind of thing. So we're looking for the second order effect. It's what it represents, which is freedom. Naval Ravikant, anyone follow him? Another great distiller of this stuff. That when you're young, you have time and health, but no money. When you're middle-aged, you have money and health, but no time. And when you're old, you have money and time, but no health. So the goal is to get all three. And whenever you see these old billionaires, they often say, I would trade all of it to just be 25 again, just to have that time. And we kind of get blind to the fact that we are so rich right now in health and time, but we put on the blinkers and we're focused on something that we don't have enough of. So we need to identify the hot buttons. So our emotions around money or around anything has a ripple effect on reality. The way that we set up our beliefs has this kind of ripple effect. And depending on how woo-woo you are along the spectrum, so like if we go from zero to woo-woo, I'm kind of over here. But even if you're over here, we could talk about this in terms of your reticular activating system. And, you know, if you close your eyes and you go, okay, think of everything that was red in the room, and you open your eyes and then you start spotting all the red stuff. It's that, you know, your beliefs create those guardrails for your behavior and how things manifest. Chasing money or pedestalizing it keeps it at a distance. It says, I'm over here and it's over there, and there's a separation between me and that thing. So the ultimate goal is to be able to let go of that distance and realize that you are the thing that you are seeking. So as adults, we have to decide whether these beliefs still serve us. I'm excited to talk about this stuff in this environment because I feel like it's not the kind of thing we talk about publicly because it's a little bit left field, but it really underpins everything else that we're talking about today. So, humor me. Can somebody make a noise to reflect the feeling of what it's like to pay £10 for something?
Mm. That's what I'm paying for.
Yeah, true.
Based on my beliefs, right?
Yeah, okay, yeah. What about paying £100 for something? Hmm. Mm. What about paying £1,000 for something?
Ah,
ooh, and then paying £10,000.
Fuck.
Fuck. Oh, so there's an emotional signature to different levels of money, but it's decimal points on a screen. So let's do the reverse. What's the noise of someone comes up to you now, just gives you £10? What? Hmm. Okay. What about £100?
Oh no!
Oh no! That's interesting. So that's a oh no no! I couldn't take you £100. That's too much. There's a feeling with that as well. What about here's £1,000. Hmm. Okay. And if someone comes up now and gives you £10,000,
what's the catch?
Okay. So there's a suspicion. It brings up all these like little buttons and like, oh, hang on, that's not right. That's outside of, has anyone seen, I don't know if I should mention this. There's a video of a guy who goes around the street and he asks 1,000 women, hi, will you have sex with me? And he counts up on the corner of the screen, like success rate and fail rate. And you can imagine what the success rate is. And then he has his mate, who's like this sexy Asian girl with like little shorts and like, and she's out doing the same thing, just asking men in the street, hi, will you have sex with me? And shows the success rate and the fail rate. And it's completely the opposite. But the men who say no are the ones who are like, hang on, what's the catch? What are you selling? Have you got a couple of guys around the corner that are going to beat me up? So there's a suspicion with it. So the point is, with this, that receiving and giving carries a kind of emotional tone to it. It's like a musical chord. And it's expressed through that noise, and it comes up with all that other stuff too. So we want to identify, what is your shit pants number? This is the number when it hits your bank account, when that's your balance, you shit your pants. And it's different for different people. And you have this kind of threshold where, like, oh, if it goes below this number, I start to get anxious. And it's usually tied to your monthly bills or whatever. But that's the anxiety threshold. And we all have, this is a concept we picked up from Sam Evans about face off with the devil, that we always operate in this kind of sine wave where there might be the shit pants number down here and the like comfortable number up here. And your bank account balance is always bouncing between those two numbers. And it's like when it hits this number, you're like, oh, okay, I'm all right. And when it goes here, shit pants. So, and that happens with everything, with like how tidy your room is or how many leads are coming into your business, or how in shape you are. You know, you might look in shape to someone else, but you might be like, oh, my delts aren't feeling quite as capped today, and I'm losing a bit of abs definition. And so we always like oscillate between these two zones. Has anyone tried trading before?
Yes.
Yeah.
Try being the key.
Being the operative word. If you haven't tried trading, everyone who's done it will look at that and be like, yeah, that's it.
It is interesting because it depends on where you are, though, you said. It depends on if you've got a lot of money coming in, £1,500 is not a lot. But if you're struggling a bit, £1,500 means a lot to you. Your shit pants number's a lot, depending on where you are in life.
So much, yeah. How much is in your trading account? And are you trading with your entire net worth, or is it just play money? So trading is the most compressed version of all of the ups and downs that we experience with online coaching and running an online business, because you're faced really closely with the fear of loss, the kind of rapture of gain and the FOMO and all that kind of stuff. And seasoned traders are just people who have just been bent over and rammed by the markets repeatedly until they just develop this like anal fibrosis that they can just kind of, they just handle this stuff. And it's like you just get like hit enough by the market until you're just like, and I've had that baptism of fire myself. So this is a really raw memory for me. Over lunch, feel free to ask me about the traumatic memory of me at 2 a.m. with my Australian girlfriend rolling over, like, and I'm sat with my laptop. She's like, mate, what are you trading? What are you? No, it's all right, darling, just go to bed. Yeah, we can cover that later. So trading gives you the calluses to confront this stuff, and so does running an online coaching business. And it's like, once you're aware of that and seeing where it's pressing your buttons, that's where it becomes really exciting to play with that stuff. And they're all the golden threads that come up with that. So the primary trading fears, and again, it applies with everything else too. Being wrong, losing money, missing out, or leaving money on the table. Had to get one more trading meme in there. Johnny and I send each other this, probably weekly. Mark Douglas talks about this, and again, there's so many parallels, that to build a mechanical trading system, and you'll start to see the parallels with the propane system now, when you're running ads, you have a predictable lead generation system and a fulfillment system, is that you have to have these things in place. The psychology of running ads is almost exactly the psychology of trading. So the way that it manifests in your online business is meddling with ads once they're running. Has anyone set an ad on, the numbers immediately go out of KPI, and you're like, oh shit, and you try and fuck with it? Yeah, it's tempting. And you just, like, to be able to say, like, all right, I'm hemorrhaging money on this, but I've just got to leave it and see what happens with it. Or not investing in yourself. I mean, you guys are over that. You've literally come to Newcastle, which is a very high bar. But a lot of people haven't examined that belief. And that's the primary belief that you'll have to overcome when you're selling coaching to people. Usually if you're the first coach that they've hired, it's not something they're used to, particularly in the UK, isn't it? Like, Americans are much more, we were talking about that yesterday, like, Americans are much more willing to invest in themselves. So we have these stories that we tell ourselves, this kind of self-sabotage. I shouldn't have to message people. They should come to me, build it and they will come. Spending on ads and then it didn't work once. You go, oh, ads don't work. Or online coaching is a scam. I don't want to increase my prices. I don't want to decrease my prices. Thinking that the market owes you something. Or trying to outsource everything before you've actually got a system in place for it. So the cheat code to this, of seeing our hidden beliefs, is looking at stupid comments and family members and that kind of thing that you get. So there's a couple that we got on our ad recently. I used to reply to them, now I just like the comment.
Always entertaining, though.
It is always good fun. So that stuff reveals our hot buttons. And how you buy is how you sell. Jerome's got an amazing sort of practical application of this soon, but the way that you approach parting with money and the the, like, scale of noises impacts how you sell stuff as well. This was on Colin's ad recently. This was for his 14-day challenge. Someone commented, nothing's for free. Colin replied saying, no, Matthew, the challenge and all the material are completely free. He said, you've paid for an advert, but it's free. So it's free forever, nothing to pay after 14 days? Like, yes, it's free, no need to pay later or anything like that. But he's so suspicious from the outset, and you can see that's gonna manifest in everything that he does. And then he's like, ah, see, I've got you. Inquire about cost and availability. This is quite a cool game. I hadn't thought about this before, but it's like, how quickly can you cover your monthly bills each month? And then just trying to compress that time as you grow until you're making £1 million a day. So does anyone know Ramit Sethi or seen his Netflix show?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. So really good, like, quite entertaining watch if you want to, if you fancy something to watch on the way back. He just goes round dysfunctional couples that have different attitudes towards money and gets them to, tries to reconcile them, and holds up the mirror, just like Lasse was saying there, of like, here are the habits that you've got right now, here is your goal, can you see how they don't match with each other? And he talks...
Yeah. It's also great to watch if you want to feel good about your own relationship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. The Jeremy Kyle effect. He talks about living your rich life now, which is like finding a couple of the lower cost things that are just nice luxuries to have. You don't have to have a Lamborghini to live some of the aspects of the like your rich lifestyle. It could be that you really like cold brew coffee and you get yourself a cold brew machine, or you go to Starbucks or whatever, if that's the thing that really does bring you joy. But it's about not just letting your whole expense landscape leak as a result. So yeah, a lot about this in terms of self-image and people's approach to giving and receiving and all that kind of stuff. So next steps is, number one, who uses a business bank account for their coaching? Nice, most people. Makes such a difference. If you're still using your personal bank account, like, okay, how did it feel when you switched to using a business bank account when you, with expenses and software and that kind of thing?
More about being
organized.
Yeah.
You get clarity on your money, don't you?
For sure.
Yeah, you just realize like how tiny percentage of the money you actually own.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like VAT, or this is expenses, this is income tax, whatever, and I have this tiny 20% or whatever.
Yeah, the buckets of that stuff. We definitely found that once you do that, you're no longer tying an expense, or you know, when we sign up, when we buy a coaching program or whatever, we're not thinking of it in terms of, oh, that's like this many months of gas bills or whatever, because it's not tied to personal expense, and it allows you to make those decisions with a lot more clarity. So we want to make those hidden beliefs conscious, make it easy for yourself by having a business bank account, definitely best practice from an accounting perspective as well. If you enjoyed this talk, and if this is the kind of thing you're like, I want to explore this a bit more deeply, I'll send you the link for the Sedona module. It's something we go more deeply into in the Inner Circle, which is our kind of continuation program. But because you've made it here, and if you've enjoyed this, I'll send you that. And we want to identify, like, what is it that comes up when you buy a coffee or invest in yourself or receive a gift from someone, and use that as the golden thread to start exploring. And if you really want to fibrose your anus, then you can get a demo trading account. Very much something that will accelerate that journey for you. If you're still operating as a sole trader and you'd prefer to just like have a personal bank account, but label it as like Jason business account. Yeah. You could do that, but I think there's still value in having like with the business account as well. It means that it separates it from personal expenses, and then 2,000, 20,000, 200,000, it just feels like Monopoly money because it's all just kind of numbers on a screen. Final thing is identify whenever you have a belief that comes up, or if you can spot something, either usually in someone else, it's easier to see. Ask yourself, like, is this my belief? Or was this my parents' belief? Was this something that I was told and I just kind of accepted when I was young and didn't have those filters to deal with that stuff? When you spend £6 on something and you're like, oh, I could have got that cheaper somewhere else. So like, what's the feeling that comes up, and can you explore that as well? For recommended reading as well, in order of woo-woo, so over here on the woo-woo spectrum, we've got Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Very easy read, kind of narrative book about this guy who had two dads, essentially. One was a rich dad, one was a poor dad, and the attitudes towards money that they had. The Abundance Book, this is way over here on the woo-woo zone. So it's a 40-day challenge from this guy. Short book, you have to do it daily meditations. Very God-focused, so if that stuff puts you off, then skip that one. And then number three, if you want to explore it more in a kind of trading context, we've got Trading in the Zone by Mark Douglas. That's a trading psychology book. But the first one, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, covers this model, essentially. So treating your life and setting up your life like this means that you can then escape the kind of rat race. So I hope you enjoyed that, guys. Any questions? Yeah. Yeah, it always like So your both your shit pants. Yeah, it's a hedonic adaptation. Like both your shit pants number and your comfortable number move up as well, and then you're bouncing between those two things.
I measure, annoyingly, I think I measure progress in terms of how much cash I've got, but I don't think that's a good measure of progress because it doesn't incorporate any buy good quality assets. Do you guys have any good alternatives to that?
I feel like you're the expert in this. the actual accountant.
Business progress,
yeah, personal progress. Business account and then personal account. Yeah, I just think it's a silly way to think about things, but it's what I do.
We look at like net cash. So just the like ins and outs. If the ins are greater than the outs, accounting for VAT and liabilities or things that a tech needs you that month. I think if that's always a positive number, it's quite hard to go wrong.
Sorry, Tom. My mic's been folded into my shirt this whole time. For me, it was around investing in ourselves, and I think when we started doing that, we very quickly kind of, on a feeling level, got this idea of a return on investment and valuing time as well. I would always just be like, oh, it's cheaper if I just like cobble together these bits of free software to try and save like $12.99 on Calendly or something. And now it's just like, look, if it saves time, we'll just do it.
I think we've both always struggled with I don't know if you've seen the exercise where you put what you do into buckets, what you think the task's worth.
Yeah.
I think we both spend, probably still now, too much time on the low value things. Mm-hmm. So like, it's a really hard thing to do conceptually, but if you can spend your time doing something that generates £1,000 an hour, like worth that £1,000 an hour, it is senseless to not focus on those things.
Yeah,
but paying for something to be outsourced to do that is painful. Because you think, oh, well, you're bored if it doesn't work.
Oh, like, I think our latest experience of that was hiring a video editor. So I was doing all the video editing up until last year, thinking, like, oh, no, but no one's going to quite get the vibe of the video that I'm trying to go for, and I'll just do it myself, it'll be fine. It only takes me 10 hours per video. And then when we hired someone, he obviously did it far better than we could with very minimal guidance. We're like, why didn't we do this earlier? So, yeah, some of that's like letting go of that control.
I was wondering, what is your experience with setting specific income goals? Because I was sitting on the train here yesterday and I was just writing down some goals for the next year. And I just started writing out down random numbers, like, oh, this much. Now, what about this much? What about this much? Because it's already at the point where, like, it's above, it's covering my expenses. And when I started out, I promised myself, I'm like, if I can just do this full time, and I can stop my shitty food delivery job, and I can focus on this, and I promised myself to be happy. I'm not going to shift the goalposts. That's what I said to myself. And, like, that number has, like,
it's exactly what Jay was saying before, isn't it? Like, you've blasted past your initial goal, and now it's like, oh, well, what do I do now?
Yeah, and it's not that I'm making, like, insane amounts of money, it's just that I don't spend that much. Even when I did, like, an exercise in Alliance a while back, just write down, like, your perfect life if you're, like, had all the money you want. And I'm like, yeah, I'll go for a run, go to the sauna, eat a nice sourdough bread.
The classic Danish triad of things to do in the day.
And that was
sounds
it.
Like a good day.
If I'm setting goals, like, should I tell myself that if I don't hit this exact number, which was, I just picked it because it was like a round number in Danish krona. Like, if I would have a different currency, the goal would probably be different because that's where the round number would lie. But what's your experience with like setting specific income goals instead of just like focusing on making everything better?
I think I know what you're going to say, but...
Okay, go on.
Do you have... Well...
Well, because I don't know what I'm going to say.
Okay. So I think income goals are a bit of a risky one because, as you say, you could just pluck it out of thin air. But if you know what your inputs are and you can say, I can control the inputs and therefore work backwards from, like, if I did this and spent this much on ads and my conversion was this, which is historically validated, and then I could generate this. And then if I reinvest this... And it, so maybe working it backwards from what your current data says.
Yeah.
But how's that for a...
Yeah, pretty good. I think... the way I see like a coaching business is it's just cash flow. So you're not going to sell it. And at some point it's going to stop. And if, like, at some point you'll not want to do it anymore. So if you can maximize cash out of the business short term and you're making way more than your sourdough bread costs, then take that and try and put that into another vehicle to still match your income. Mm-hmm. So if you could, off the back of your coaching business, build a passive income by investing the cash into something else, then you don't have to do anything.
Quick question related to that. Because talking about investing, I've thought about
like if I should invest any of my money. And when I look at like what are my options, like put it in an index fund and it will perform really well, it's maybe like 10% a year, but if I spend it on ads, it'll be like 200% in 20 days.
There's your answer.
But like when I think like of my top cap of clients that I want to have, after that, I'm wondering like maybe I should just like focus more of my time on like writing emails and like having a more of an automated selling for like a do-it-yourself product or even a low-tier subscription that would not like put more of my time into my like working week. That's what I think of like in terms of investments when I get to that point.
Yeah, so you're looking at time as one of the currencies there. So it's how can you, it depends what you want to optimize for. I think something that you may be conflating there is you've got putting cash into the S&P or reinvesting into ads. We've got to separate out your capital growth strategy with your income strategy.
Yeah.
Because they're separate things. And so like, and if you want, and you've got to think of like, what's the return for the relative risk? So some people will do the like Nassim Taleb barbell strategy of like 10% into Bitcoin and then 90% into bonds.
Yeah.
So it's like, even if the radical investment completely goes tits up, it's okay because it was only 10% of your capital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I say my view on what you said on his question? I think it's like, I said that to some Finnish clients as well, so I may be wrong. It's like, you know, what if I, should I say I lose 10 kilos in 3 months, what if I don't reach it? Like, it's too high goals, or like, should I say I make 150K in a year, what if I don't reach it? I think it's about the process. It's like, I think it's good for the number to be higher, even instead of, you know, like 200,000. Because obviously, even if you don't come close, from the process you're doing to reach the number, then you're going to get the benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same for the followers. Like, even if you don't get 10% modified and you get 15, you won't really, like you see yourself in the mirror in the end, be like, oh, cool. But it's like what you did, the whole benefit is what you did.
It's who you become in the process.
For me, I'm not where I want to be for sure. But when I look back for the past year, like, I'm super, super happy for doing the process, the whole thing, and as, like, the net profit is like the clients raise so much and the investment raise so much. So the net profit is kind of similar, but the growth of the business is higher. And I think like putting a ridiculous number a little bit helps a little bit more because it, you know, you're like, if you put a small number, probably you're going to be doing smaller things in your process. So it's like good for
the thing. Nice.
So it's not even 20 to 11, and I have to mention the chimp paradox.
Oh, yeah.
Because Steve Peters talks in the chimp paradox about how the chimp will always redraw the line. It sounds like a lot of people are alluding to that very thing of you can set a number and think that that's when you've made it, and invariably you'll get there, and that circuit, that chimp in your brain, will redraw the line. So your human circuit has to decide, you know, do I want to cross that line? You know, where do I want to be? And I think a useful thought experiment is to imagine that, you know, okay, we've made a billion. What would you want your life to look like with that money? And that helps you to reconnect with, okay, well, actually, I still quite enjoy some of the coaching. I like, you know, being able to help people. So, I mean, you can get really caught up in the numbers, but the chimp is going to read all the line.
That's so true. Like, the human and the chimp have totally different goals. And then you look at people who are billionaires, and you go, and they're not happy. And you go, oh, no, but if I was a billionaire, I would be happy. It's just that's a problem with them. Yeah, crazy.
I think one of the things that's helped for me, actually, just kind of echoing something that you said a minute ago about kind of living a rich life now, is I reckon that I won't kind of prescribe this for anyone else, but one of the things that I felt for me is that any time I did hit a particular financial goal, it didn't fill me with, like, a fucking bliss. It was like 30 seconds of relief. And then a little bit of apathy and confusion to what has left until I... And this is very, very extremely new for me. It's really, really, really specific on kind of the, well, what the hell is it for? And if that's, and sometimes even kind of level one of that is this ethereal thing of like, might be nice to get a new car or something, or travel generally is like this ethereal idea. But I think spending a bit more, for me anyway, spending a bit more time on, well, what exactly is it that I want, reverse engineering that. And I was extremely surprised very quickly of how much of the things that were on my genuine kind of heart-centric approach that I can actually access now. So reverse engineering the goal instead of just picking out a random number, because I think for most people who are naturally entrepreneurially minded, they've got that kind of that dopamine-focused drive. But even if they do hit it, it will be like, yay, and then 10 seconds later, now what?
It's that, that post-goal clarity, isn't it?
Yeah. And then it wasn't like a continual amount of joy that you got from that and getting to, because I think a lot of people, I used to think that when I set a financial goal, I would step into that new number and there would be a constant amount of joy that I would get from that. And that just never appeared. So reverse engineering it from, well, what do I actually want it for? And being really quite aggressive with yourself to find some clarity and make sure you want those things. A, that will give you a better idea. For me anyway, got give me a better idea of what exactly I did want to achieve. And B, it made me realize that I can actually achieve a lot more of the things on that list now.
I love that. Yeah. There's a guy called Felix Dennis who wrote a book about documenting his becoming ridiculously rich, and he set up and run like a media giant and like PC World magazine and all this kind of stuff. So he had like multi-hundred-million dollars, and now he just spends his time in like a little cabin in the forest, not cabinet, in the forest writing poetry, and he's one of the people who said like I would trade it all for the time
is
back.
A little bit like when Chris Williams always talks about the parable of the Mexican.
Exactly like that. You'd go full circle.
Yeah,
very similar.
It's like, what are you really trying to pursue? Which is it worth it?
Mm. And that's his reality. And he's like, what have I done? And he's very much like, don't try and get super rich because it's not worth it.
Yeah. Mm.